Well, good morning. If you have your Bible, open up to Luke chapter 12. This has been a meaty chapter for us to work through. It's amazing the difference an hour makes, right? Even though with all the technology changing your clocks, still doesn't change some things. So, all right. Well, I hope this week that you have been pondering in small group and in your personal study just how pervasive the sin of greed can be. Beginning last Sunday evening, right after the service, me and Dave were talking about this subject of greed and how it's so easy to go the money route and just focus on that and miss all of the other ways in which greed infiltrates our life and our heart. And all through the week, people have been messaging me or in counseling, talking to me and telling me different ways that they've been applying the message from last week. And the message from last week was kind of the diagnostic. It was just the heart check, if you will, kind of the check engine light that pops on that lets you know that you have a problem with greed. And so throughout the week, different people have come to me and told me different things that they have realized that they're greedy with. Beyond money, I mean, there's obviously the money and the stuff piece of it, but beyond that, one of the things that I kept hearing a lot was that people were greedy with their time. This was one of the big places where people were greedy, is they wanted their time. They didn't want to share their time. They didn't want to give their time away, and they really struggled with that. Another place that people saw greed that they hadn't really thought about it in this context as the sin of greed was emotional availability. Right? They might show up and they might be there, but they're not going to emotionally care. They're not really going to invest and take the time to get to know people, to love people, to care for people. There may be this sense of duty that wills them to do whatever it is they're supposed to do, but they're emotionally detached from it. Some people said they were greedy with grace. They realized all of the grace in which they have received, and yet they were envious of others when they received grace as well. Some people said they were greedy with their comfort, right? They will do a lot of things as long as you don't make me uncomfortable. At that point, I'm very greedy with my comfort, and I'm not going to share that. I'm not going to give that up. You want me to go to a third world country? I don't know. What do they eat there, right? What's the bathroom situation like, right? I got some questions for you. Why? Because my comfort is really important to me. Sadly, me and Megan were talking about another kind of greed that the church has been guilty of for the past few decades. The church and its greed to provide concert-level performances in their services, they have used many talented musicians without even making sure they were Christians. And sadly, this is what me and Megan were talking about. We have a lot of high-profile worship leaders or worship artists who have walked away from the faith in the last couple of years. Some denouncing Jesus outright, others just leaving the church because they saw it as just a show, because in many ways it was. Listen to this quote. Now, this quote is coming from a charismatic background, right? This is typically a worship in spirit kind of person. But the problem is so pervasive when it comes to the church's greed in the area of music. He wrote this: could we possibly be seeing the results now of a generation of incredible musicians, songwriters, and artists struggling with their faith largely because their gift was taken full advantage of before there was a solid foundation of biblical truth set in their heart and soul? Are the poisons of an unbalanced equipping and cultural relevance over biblical foundation beginning to bite us? I want to submit that the problem is rooted in an overall lack of equipping and biblical foundation in the Word. We've exploited the gift prior to equipping the saint. Now again, this is coming from a denomination and a background that isn't normally talking about equipping people in doctrine and understanding biblical truth, right? But even they see the problem is so pervasive in the greed that has entered into the church of we want these things, and our people want these things. They're greedy for them, so we have to do whatever we need to do to make that happen. And it's why so many musicians have walked away from the church. And listen, it's not just music, right? This is an easy one for me to kind of target, but I've talked to people who've served in all kinds of areas that basically felt the same. I just felt used. That there was no equipping, there was no discipling, there was no anything. It was just get to work. You come, you want to become a member, great. Next Sunday, we need you in the kids' room. And there was no time or process of making sure that people were really where they needed to be spiritually. And that's just being greedy as a church. Wanting what we want above what other people need. So as you can see, that last week, this text, it exposes greed in so many ways in our lives. And Jesus talks about it as a root sin, that out of it comes many other sins. We begin to make other compromises because we're so greedy for something that we begin to think we deserve it. We should have it. And we'll kind of overlook that, and we won't pay attention to that. We'll turn a blind eye to that. We begin to sin more because of greed. And so I mentioned last week that last week's text was just the diagnostic. Jesus didn't give us any answers really for it. It was just, let's pull the curtain back on your heart and look at all of the places that you struggle with greed. And that this week is kind of part two, that Jesus begins to give us the answer to help us to overcome greed in our lives. So let's read together. This is kind of a little bit of a long passage this morning. So we're gonna pace ourselves. We can do this morning. We're going to start in verse 22. Read with me together as a church. And he said to his disciples, "Therefore, I tell you, do not be anxious about your life, what you will eat, nor about your body, what you will put on. For life is more than food, and the body more than clothing. Consider the ravens. They neither sow nor reap. They have neither storehouse nor barn. And yet God feeds them. Oh, how much more value are you than the birds? And which of you, by being anxious, can add a single hour to his span of life? If then you are not able to do as small a thing as that, why are you anxious about the rest? Consider the lilies, how they grow. They neither toil nor spin. Yet I tell you, even Solomon in all his glory was not arrayed like one of these. But if God so clothes the grass, which is alive in the field today, and tomorrow is thrown into the oven, how much more will he clothe you, O you of little faith? And do not seek eat what you are to drink, nor be worried. For all the nations of the world seek after these things, and your Father knows that you need them. Instead, seek his kingdom, and these things shall be added to you. Fear not, little flock, for it is your Father's good pleasure to give you the kingdom. Sell your possessions and give to the needy. Provide yourselves with money bags that will not grow old, with a treasure in the heavens that does not fail, where no thief approaches and no moth destroys. For there your treasure is, there will your heart be also." Now Jesus is giving us the answer to greed and how we can deal with coveting what we don't have and trying to get more. you notice there, Jesus says, therefore I tell you in verse 22, do not be anxious about your life, what you will eat, nor about your body, what you will put on. I'm really thankful that that's not all he said, right? Because that sounds incredibly easy. Like, oh, okay, I just should not do that. But in reality, that's incredibly difficult. I don't know about you, but it is for me. And so Jesus, loving, caring, compassion toward his disciples, which we are part of that group, he begins to lay out some arguments, and he wants them to understand not just here's what you should do, but here's why you should do what I'm commanding and telling you to do. And so the first argument, we're going to see these arguments in verses 22 through 30. And he gives us these arguments against our anxiety and our worry that come from greed. And what Jesus is saying here in these passages, as we read through them, I want you to kind of remember this one statement. Fight greed with truth and faith. The way to overcome greed, the way to fight the greed that's inside of all of our hearts is truth and faith. That's what Jesus is going to say to us over and over in these four different arguments here in Luke chapter 12. First, the first argument we see in verse 24, consider the ravens. Jesus' point here is that we ought to look at these birds that don't have any jobs, right? They don't earn a paycheck, right? They're not looking forward to Friday like some of us are. They don't own a house. They don't have any deeds that they're holding on to, no property. And yet God provides the food that they need to eat. And Jesus, or his argument here is, if God provides for the birds, he'll provide for you. Now, this argument that Jesus is making depends upon two things. If you look at the passage, it depends on your coming to really believe in God's sovereignty. You have to believe in God's sovereignty if you're going to get the argument that Jesus is making here. Do you really believe that God is the one providing for you? See, if you're living in that delusion that you are the one that is providing for you, this is going to be an incredibly hard thing for you to do, and you're frankly going to be a very anxious person because you're putting all this pressure on you to do something that ultimately you can't do, as Jesus will show us in the next argument. So you've got to understand, you've got to believe and trust in his sovereignty, that he providentially is providing everything that we need in our lives. That's why he points you to the birds in the first place. And then secondly, it depends on you understanding that you have value. That you are valuable to God because you are made in the image of God. You are image bearers. That fact alone gives you value. This is why as Christians we should always fight for human life in whatever shape, form, or fashion. Whether it's in the womb, whether it's at 70 or 80 years old. We fight for human life. Why? Because human life has value. It has dignity because it is an image bearer of God. This is why for Christians, we should never condone racism in any form. Because we're looking at another group, color, race, whatever of people and making some kind of judgment that they're not also image bearers of God too, which is not true. Every person living and breathing is an image bearer of God and has value. And so Jesus is saying, you need to understand your value. Understand who you are. Now in the context here, specifically talking to the disciples, right? Those who are called and chosen by God. How much value do you have? Do you really believe this morning that you have value? Jesus is expecting us to hold these two truths in our hands. One, that God is sovereign, that he providentially is providing everything that we need. And secondly, that you are of value, that God values you. You have to understand where your value comes from. It doesn't come from you, it comes from him. But because of that, you have value. So Jesus is putting these two truths. This is why I was saying we need truth and faith to overcome anxiety. So the truth piece of this first argument is that we need to understand God's providence, that God sovereignly provides for you. And you'll understand, if you'll understand, that you are far more valuable than these birds, that he also takes care of. Right? See the logic here? It's like he's taking care of them. How much more important are you than these birds? Surely if he's taking care of these birds, he will also take care of you. That's the deduction he's wanting us to make from this argument, right? That if God is taking care of them, he will take care of us. He'll provide for you and me. But listen, I know that's easy to say, but when you're struggling day to day to survive, it's going to require you to really meditate on this verse on this argument until you believe it. It's going to take you praying through this over and over and over again until you believe it. Then in verses 25 through 26, we see a second argument. He says, which of you by being anxious can add a single hour to his lifespan? In other words, Jesus' argument here is that worry doesn't do anything. Now, our children's director, David Breeden, he likes to say this. Worry is like a rocking chair. It will give you something to do, but it won't get you anywhere. He's not said many wise things in his life, but that's one of those things that stood out to me, right? Because it will give you something to do. You feel like you're doing something, but you're not going anywhere. Nothing changes, right? We find ourselves in circumstances constantly in this life that remind us of our human limitations, that we're not what we want to be. And by our own strengths, we can't change that. So what do? Our normal reaction is to worry about it, right? That's our normal reaction. We don't have the strength to change the situation, so we'll just worry about it instead, as if that's doing something. To which Jesus is kind of pulling the curtain back, going, hey, guess what, guys? That doesn't work. It doesn't do anything. It doesn't change anything. It doesn't make you feel better. It doesn't make the people around you feel better. It doesn't change your situation at all. On the contrary, worry and anxiety lead you to feeling worse. And for those of you who have been in constant states of worry and anxiety, you know it also leads to health conditions. If you remain in an anxious state for too long, it will make you feel as though you are losing your mind. I can't tell you how many people I've had that have come and talked to me and they said, Dale, I feel like I'm going crazy. And it all goes back to being anxious about something for months. So not only does it not make things better, it actually makes things worse. The next time you find yourself in a situation in which your weakness, your finiteness is brought out into the light, the answer is not to worry. The answer is to rest in God's sovereignty. Every situation in your life that points to your limitations points to his lack of limitations. Every experience in life that points to your lack points to his abundance. Every experience in your life that points to your finitude points to his infinite. Every situation in your life that points to your weakness points to his power. See, we forget that in the midst of the struggle because we're too busy worrying about things. Instead of looking to the one who can actually fix the problem, who can solve the problem, we focus instead on worrying about the problem. So our limitations in life shouldn't lead us to anxiety and worry. It should lead us to meditating on God's sovereignty. Why? Jesus says, because you can't add a single hour to your life. In other words, there's no point. It doesn't help. And if anything, it hurts in the long run. You can't add a hair to your head, but God can supply all your needs. He makes the third argument in verses 27 through 28 when he says, consider the lilies. They don't toil or spin, yet they're arrayed in more glory than Solomon. I want you to notice one thing before I get into this argument, to this a pattern that's starting to emerge here with what Jesus is saying. To do what Jesus is asking us to do, just to consider things, it means you have to slow down. It means you have to turn off the TV. It means you have to turn off the radio. You have to shut the computer down. You have to turn the phone off. You have to get rid of all the distractions in this world, because their whole purpose is to keep you from considering what Jesus is asking you to consider. This is why, as a spiritual discipline, silence and solitude is so important for the Christian life. To have an ordered Christian life, there has to be times in which you just turn everything off and you turn your attention to him. And Jesus says one of the ways that we can do this is just by considering nature. Like he's pulling a couple of examples out for us, but there's nothing special about these analogies that he's making, in the sense that you can go in your backyard today and probably find a similar analogy. There's some animal living in your backyard that God is providing for. Have you slowed down to go outside and pay attention to that? To be able to consider the flowers, to consider the birds. Jesus is arguing here with the lilies that if God would clothe the grass, right, and the flowers so gloriously, wouldn't he also clothe you the same way? If God, in other words, will decorate something that is going to be gone in a short period of time, much shorter than a human life typically, right? And God goes to all this detail. In other words, God didn't just make this world functional, right? Like I always think about that scene from The Matrix when I think about this. If you've ever seen that movie, they're sitting there and they're eating this bowl of what looks like slop. And the guy says, it's everything a human body needs. All the exact nutrients, blah, 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 blah. And he's like, the other guy's like, yeah, but it's not a steak, right? Like it's, there's more than what the body needs than just the functional thing, right? And when you look at nature, God didn't just make something functional. He made something glorious and beautiful and amazing. Not just functional. Jesus is saying it's beautiful even if it's temporary. Even if it's just here today and gone tomorrow. It's beautiful. Even the flowers that look beautiful today will be shriveled and gone in a couple of days. And the morning sun. And yet he makes it beautiful. The point is this, if God will clothe his earth in beauty, even though it's temporary and it won't last, don't you think he's concerned about you and what you are clothed with? Again, the argument depends on understanding the truth of how generous God is. That he is incredibly generous. You see, the person who is struggling with greed here, here's the sad news. That the person who's struggling with greed, and that's me and you, as we talked about this last week, is at the end of the day, we believe God is stingy. We believe that God is stingy. Have you ever thought about that this morning? Now, you may not have ever actively said, oh God, I think you're stingy. But do you functionally live that way? You see, when we have this poverty mindset for God, we start to think that God just sort of kind of parcels out little chunks of blessings, right? That he just gives us just enough to get by. That he doesn't want to give us any more, right? When in fact, God is incredibly lavish with his grace. And he's generous in his giving. To the point that he cares about the way things look in this world. So much so that he made even the trees and the grass and the flowers beautiful. He clothed this world beautifully. So Jesus is saying, do you believe that God would make such generous provision for grass and he wouldn't make that provision for you? And this is something just personally, guys, that God has really been running me through the ringer last year and helping me to understand and see I had a very poverty mindset view of God. That I did not see God as being generous. And God has really been breaking me and showing me all of these different places in my life where honestly I had just been settling, thinking, well, this is as good as it can get. I just got to make the best with what I've got, right? So growing up, again, American poor, I don't even consider myself now poor outside of this country by any means, but growing up American poor, you had to do the best with what you had. And we learned to share, not because sharing was caring, but because if you wanted anything, you had to share, right? You had to take the one thing you had and share with your five cousins so maybe then you could have something. So we did the best with what we had. And I realized that as God was kind of working me through, reading through the Bible last year and just kind of showing God just constantly the generosity that God showed to the nation of Israel. Like they are, man, so ungrateful all throughout the Old Testament, constantly turning away from him, constantly cheating on him, but yet he is constantly lavishing grace upon them. Grace upon grace upon grace. It just blew my mind as I'm reading it. And God is like, what? Why do you think that ended in the Old Testament? So many people read the Old Testament and they see an angry God. I see a graceful God. That when that anger and vengeance is triggered, it's after he's tried 100 times of giving them grace. He is so gracious. He's so generous. And Jesus is saying, look, if you want to overcome anxiety, if you want to beat worry, if you want to beat greed in your life, you've got to understand this truth that God is generous. He's sovereign. You matter. You have value. And he's generous. When we stop thinking he's generous, we start thinking he's stingy, and then we start thinking we've got to get everything we can get on our own. We've got to do it ourselves. We can't wait on God. We've got to make it happen ourselves. Jesus wants us to see this morning that God is generous, even in the way he provides for his creation. The fourth argument he makes here is in verses 29 through 30. He says, and do not seek what you are to eat and what you are to drink, nor be worried, for the nations of the world seek after these things. And then listen to these words, and your Father knows that you need them. Now, Jesus in this passage, is pointing us to three biblical truths. The truth of the fatherhood of God. Now, this is a difficult one, I know, given the fathers that many of you had growing up, and can make it incredibly difficult to hear me even say, God is your father, because that conjures up some really bad thoughts about what a father does and how a father treats a child. But God is the good father, the father that we should have had in our earthly fathers when they fail us. And Jesus wants us to stop for a minute and ponder something else. Not only lilies, not only birds, but he wants us to ponder God being our good father. Do you know of a good father? Notice I said good father. Even humanly, that doesn't care whether his children eat? Do you know of a good father who doesn't care whether his kids have clothes or not? Do you know of a good father who doesn't care whether the children have a place to sleep at night? He says, I want you to remember the fact that God is your father and he is good. I want you to meditate on the goodness of your father who knows your need, who understands what it is that you need in your life. Your father knows that you need these things, he says. He knows everything. He knows you. He knows the desires of your heart. He wants you to meditate on his fatherhood, the fatherhood of God, the goodness of God. In other words, Jesus gives all these arguments and reasons, and he says, you've got to believe these things. You've got to have faith in me. I'm telling you these things are true. You've got to believe and meditate on them and pray them back to me. In other words, he's telling us this morning that we need to fight our greed with the truth about God. And by faith in that truth, faith in what God has promised, faith in what God has said, we begin to have victory over greed in our lives. And this is why it's so important that you understand the Word of God. It's one of the reasons why we teach through books the way we do. We want you to understand His Word. We want you to be reading and studying and diving into His Word because you have to know these truths about God. Otherwise, you get these skewed pictures of God based on what other people have said. Read what God has said about Himself. Ask yourself, as you read some of those Old Testament stories and you're tempted to judge God whenever He does bring judgment, ask yourself, would you have waited as long? Would you have given them as many opportunities and chances as He did? If you were an omnipowerful, could do whatever you want, God? Or would you have just done? Let me hit the reset button. Let's start over again. And yet we see the patience of God by being in His Word, learning His truth, growing in it. We need this to help us fight against the sin of greed. Really, we need this to help us fight against any sin, but greed specifically today. Third, he kind of takes us in a different tact here now. Moving away from these arguments in verse 31 and 32, he gives us kind of a key to defeating greed. And it's really pretty amazing. Look at what he says. Instead of worrying, instead of seeking what you're to eat and drink, being all caught up in getting the things that you need, instead, seek his kingdom, for it is your Father's good pleasure to give you the kingdom. Do you see what Jesus is saying here? He's saying when you are letting greed make you focus on what you don't have, here's the problem. Your problem is that you don't want enough. Your problem, Jesus is saying, is that you don't want enough. Jesus' knockout punch for greed, wanting those things that you don't have, is that you don't want enough. You've set your heart on sights that are too low, too little. Because even if you got what your heart was set on, when it's not set on God, when it's not set on his kingdom, even if you got it, it wouldn't satisfy you. How many times have you experienced that in your life? You spent months saving, waiting. Maybe you don't even save. Maybe you buy it on credit. And you get that new phone and you're like, yes, I've got that new phone. It's awesome. And 3 months later, they come out with a newer phone. And you're like, ugh, all my joy is gone. Or you save up and get that new car and then somebody scratches it and they hit it. Man, there goes your joy, right? Why? Because earthly things, they can never possibly fully satisfy us. God knows that about us. And so he tells us, don't set your sights too low. Greed is a problem of not wanting enough. You need to be wanting more. I think Lewis said it best. Our problem is not that we want too much. It's that we're satisfied with too little. Our focus is set too low when it's set on the things of this world. Our desires are set way below that which God has prepared for us. And so Jesus says the answer to this, the answer to greed, is to seek the kingdom, because that's what the Father wants to give you. He wants to give you the kingdom. You want a new car, but he wants to give you the kingdom. You want a new phone, but he wants to give you the kingdom. You want a richer husband, but he wants to give you the kingdom. You want a more beautiful wife, but he wants to give you the kingdom. You want to be well known, but he wants to give you the kingdom. He wants to give you far more than you have your heart set on. So Jesus is saying, make sure you want what God made you for and not anything less. Jesus is telling us this morning, if we're struggling with greed, then we're not asking for enough. It's not that we're asking for too much, we're not asking for enough. We're not wanting enough. You don't want something that's really going to satisfy you until you seek his kingdom. So how do we know? How do we know? How do we show that we believe this promise Jesus is making to us, that when we seek his kingdom, all these other things will be added unto us? How do we know? Jesus is like, I'm glad you asked. Verse 33 through 34. Sell your possessions and give to the needy. Provide yourselves with money bags that do not grow old, with a treasure in the heavens that does not fail, where no thief approaches and no moth destroys. For where your treasure is, there will your heart be also. So how do we show? How do we live like we believe the promise that Jesus is making in verse 31? Well, we do it by believing the promise. And what's the promise? That all these things will be added to you. If you seek first the kingdom, all these things will be added to you. So what Jesus is saying here, he's making a promise to kingdom seekers. He's saying he will supply all your needs. He's saying that God will supply all your needs. Isn't that what Paul says in Romans 8:32? He who did not spare his own son but delivered him up for us all, how will he not with him freely give us all things? Or in Philippians 4:19, my God will supply every need of yours according to his riches and glory in Christ Jesus. It's a promise, and Jesus says to you, believe the promise. And then then he says something really extraordinary in verse 33 and 34. Jesus gives a call to disciples who want to reject the life of greed. He says, if you want to reject this life of greed that the world is selling you, always trying to gather more and more and more so that you'll be happy, look at what he says. Sell your possessions and give to the needy. Provide yourselves with money bags that do not grow old, with a treasure in the heavens that does not fail. For where your treasure is, there will your heart be also. Jesus said, here's the last thing you need to do to defeat greed. It's not just about believing the truths. You need to know those truths. You need to understand those truths. But if you walk out of here this morning and all you do is go, oh, I believe those things, then you're not applying Jesus' message. Here's the application to Jesus' message. The application comes in these verses. The last thing you need to do to defeat greed is to be generous. If you want to defeat greed in your life, if you want to overcome the sin of greed in your life, the way in which we practically go about doing it is first believing in the truth about God, having faith in the promises of God, and then acting on them. And the way we act on them is by being generous. So why does Jesus say to do this? I think at least two reasons. First of all, it reminds you that God has already provided for you generously. Now, I know there's a temptation sometimes for people, and maybe even pastors sometimes, to take this verse to the extreme. Notice what Jesus doesn't say. Jesus doesn't say, sell all your possessions, right? That's not what he's saying here. He's saying, sell your possessions. The reality is, every single one of you in this room this morning, I don't care how rich or how poor you are, you could go home, you could look in your closet, and you could either give something away or you could sell it and give that money to someone or something, right? So what Jesus is calling us to do very practically this morning is to remind ourselves of what God has already provided for us generously. Again, every single one of us can go home this afternoon and practice this. And I don't care if you're a kid in this room. Chances are you've been lavished with a lot of toys by grandparents. You got a few you could spare, right? We can all apply this truth. This isn't some extreme sell everything kind of thing Jesus is calling us to. But what he's saying is that when we really believe that God is generous and that God is going to provide for us, then we reassess the stuff we have. And we start to think in a kingdom way and go, do I really need 25 pairs of shoes? Do I? Or could I sell half of those or give half of those away and expand the kingdom of God through generosity? And in the process, start fighting the greed that is in my heart of wanting the 26th pair, right? Our stuff isn't where happiness comes from. And that's the second thing that Jesus is trying to get us to see by this application. It reminds you that the stuff that you're giving away isn't where you get your joy. That all those possessions that you have, all those things that you have, At the end of the day, that's not where your joy comes from. And in giving that away, you're able to bless someone who is less fortunate than you, who doesn't have as much as you do. And that's what Jesus is calling us to. He's calling us to believe that God is generous by then us acting generous, right? We're image bearers, right? We reflect his image, meaning we should, as believers, reflect all of the truths about God in Scripture that we humanly can. There are limitations to what we can do, right? We can't be everywhere at once, right? But God is generous. And if we truly believe that God is generous, then we should reflect that by being generous. That's why generosity is not an option in the Christian life. You're not going to be able to defeat greed if you're not generous. Because if you're not being generous this morning, then the reality is you are still ensnared by greed. And remember how I started this sermon. It's easy to make greed just about stuff and money. And it is. But it's so much more than that. Are you generous with your time? Are you generous with your emotional availability? Are you generous with grace? Or do you find yourself being greedy with those things? The way to defeat that, the way to beat that, is to believe the truth, have faith in the truth, and then act on that truth by being generous this morning. Let's pray. Father,